You're listening to Your Rivers Are Wrong, the podcast.
Good morning, or evening, or afternoon, whenever you may be. Welcome back to the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast, season four.
Woo!
Season four. Well, you definitely cut out on that woo.
Wasn't it too loud, woo?
I don't know. It might have been. Who knows? We'll find out in post. Don't worry about it. Anyway, welcome back to the podcast. We are very... we're keeping that in.
It was worth it, you know? It was worth it. It deserves a woo.
Absolutely. We're so excited to be back. This is episode 41. And if you're not familiar with this podcast, what we do here is we world build, we storytell, and we figure out everything in between.
That's right.
I've been requested to throw out my old intro and figure out a new one. So every episode, we're going to be trying something new. Hopefully, it'll be interesting. There's a lot of things to work through as we enter into the new year, 2023. I'm pumped. I'm so excited to be back.
Me too. It feels great.
Oh, we haven't done names. Yeah. Hi, I'm Dante. Nice to meet you. One of the hosts.
Hi, I'm Marla. And it's also nice to meet you. And I'm also one of the hosts. In fact, we're co-hosting.
We are, in fact, co-hosting. And if you're not familiar, we live on opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those times we get to hang out, talk about something we truly love, which is all this.
That's right.
If you're not familiar with us, obviously, there are 39 episodes of more than 40 episodes, actually, things you can look back on topics that we've covered. At this point, there's 80 something topics that we've touched on in regards to world building and storytelling. And this is our continuation into a new year. Things to sort out. Let's get these out of the way. We passed over our little break 3,000 listens on our podcast,
which is amazing. Oh, my God. All these people listening to our thing.
Yeah, it's a little intimidating. Yeah. It's actually a bit scary.
Good scary, though. Yeah.
But it's so exciting. That's a big number now. Hopefully small number later. We'll see. We'll see. Other things, as of the time we're recording this, which is right now, it's about a week before Christmas weekend. Mm-hmm. This is officially the 1 year anniversary of episode number one, which you recorded on the 18th of last year, I think. So this
is the day
we recorded.
I did not realize that. Holy shit. That's a great timing.
Yeah, we didn't coordinate it.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. So a lot of good landmarks. What else are we covering? What else? Oh, right. A little life update on us. We are working our way through old movies. That was our goal this break, to catch up on all the movies that we supposedly should know or
watch.
Very
important. Yes.
As commenters of the medium. And we have watched, what movie have we watched so far?
Titanic, the one and only. The necessary watch, I should say.
Yeah.
That I was very skeptical of. I mean, I've already watched it.
You've already watched it, yes.
Once before we did the watch. And then before I ever watched it, I was very skeptical because I was like, everyone keeps talking about this stupid movie. It's got to be I'm getting fed up with this movie, even though I haven't seen it, you know? And then you watch it and you realize it's actually a good movie, which is why people are talking about it. Yeah. So, you know, I changed my mind. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
It was a great start of this plan that we have.
This long-term plan to just watch all the movies
chaotic,
we haven't watched.
Yeah. It's too. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely first impressions. First half. I'm like, dang, Leo DiCaprio is such a charismatic young actor.
Yeah.
He's got a great career ahead of him, certainly. And the second half of the movie,
shit. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
Second half of the movie, the only thing I can remember is what's your fit? Rose grabbed the axe. Rose, find an axe. She's running through the whole boat trying to find a key to a lock. I'm like, there's no way you're gonna find it. Find an axe. And it was she did eventually.
Yeah, but you called it out.
Turns out it was a good movie.
It was a great movie.
Crazy.
We love Kate Winslet in this house, and she was great in this.
We do. And on our list afterwards is Princess Bride. I think that's our next one, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's right. Which
neither of us have watched.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Should be exciting.
Very exciting indeed.
Okay. Any updates on your end?
I won a tiny prize, which is cool.
Oh, you won a tiny prize?
Yeah.
You won a tiny prize?
It's a very random update.
Is it significant that it's a tiny prize?
But I don't know what tiny prize means. I participated in a small, local short story competition / poetry competition.
Ooh.
And I won fifth place.
That's sick.
Yeah, which was great. I didn't get anything except for honor and a nice handshake, but it was great because now I can say I had fifth place. And it was very nice.
Listen, you could say you're a winner now. You're award winning.
I'm such a winner, you know? Yes. Award winning. I'll take it.
Short story. Yeah, we're gonna tack that onto the title. I'll say that as much as I can this season.
Is this gonna be like a Sam Riegel Emmy award winning? Yeah.
I'm here with award winning, Marla.
Please don't.
It'll sneak up on you when you least expect it.
No.
Let's see. Other things, other updates. Season 4 is going to be a little bit different. We are covering one topic per episode. We used to cover two topics per episode, but the episodes got a little bit long and we want to give proper time for each topic without making the episode way too long. And in this season, the 5th and 10th episode will be fan submitted prompts. So there will be opportunities throughout the next couple of weeks to submit your prompts. You can either send it to yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. I might post something on my YouTube channel, which is WintryD&D. And or there's a new Q&A section in Anchor and Spotify where we can set up a question and you guys can answer it, which is cool. And I don't know how that works yet, but we will.
We will figure it out. As we change it up, we will also try out new things. So if it doesn't work, you'll hear from us again. But so far, we're doing a new thing. And I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Give us some breathing room and some ability to actually dive a little bit deeper before being like, oh, 20 minutes passed, got to switch to the other one.
Yeah, it should be exciting.
Yeah.
That said, we are switching hosts every episode. Well, switching like main hosts or speaker hosts. I don't know how that works. Basically, I'm bringing today, if you're ready for it, I'm bringing the topic and the prompt that Merle will answer at the end. And next week, Merle is bringing the topic and the prompt that I will answer. So we're going to swap every episode, which should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to see how it works out. I'm very excited. Yes.
Anything else before we jump in?
I'm all good. I'm super ready.
Okay, cool. We're a little bit rusty. We're picking back into this.
Which is fine. You know, no harm in that.
Well, with that said, let's jump into episode 41 of Your Rivers Are Wrong. And today I have a topic for you, which again, for the audience, Merle doesn't know what the topic is.
Nope, no clue.
But I do. I hope one of us knows the topic. And today it's me.
I hope we won't like get this wrong and then no one has something for a week. And we're like, wait, didn't you? Imagine? Wasn't this your week?
No, we'll ad-lib it. We're professionals.
Obviously,
we can
ad-lib it
if that ever comes up.
We're good at improv and stuff. It's our thing. Yeah, okay.
If neither of us have a topic, you all will never know. we'll just cut it out in post. No, I'm kidding. It's fine. Anyway. Today's topic, an appropriate topic, I felt, for the first episode of the season. We're going to talk about introductions.
Aha.
Very specifically, character introductions.
Okay.
So
I like it.
When you kick off any story, right, whether it be at a tabletop between a number of people or a single author story, the way you introduce your characters is very very important. And today I kind of want to highlight very specifically the differences and similarities between the process of highlighting a character in a collaborative story versus highlighting a character in the context of a single author story. Now, both of us, if you somehow don't know, we both play a good amount of D&D, Dungeons and Dragons. And if you don't know what Dungeons and Dragons is, it's a tabletop role-playing game where a story is told amidst a group of people working together to tell a story.
Please refer to our first episode in which we talk more about it.
Exactly. You can go to episode number one for exactly that. Now, Merle and I both know that the first session of a new campaign is always a little bit rocky for one reason in particular. We're all bringing a new character to the table.
Yep.
And we're all real uncomfortable about it at the start.
That's too accurate. Yeah, it's very true.
It's like you're reintroducing yourself as somebody else to your friends. And you kind of got to sell them on the idea that you are now somebody else.
But also it's like you go to a new school and you're like, hi, I'm the new kid, but I'm also very cool. Please like me. Or don't like me. You know, if you're very likable, it's very hard to not be likable naturally.
Yeah, it's like you're pitching yourself to your friends. Like, hey, again, it's me. But this time I'm 7 feet tall and blue. You know, that kind of thing.
I really am. You got to trust me on this. Yeah.
So today's episode will be focused on smoothing that out and figuring out the best way to handle that. Now, in my personal experience, the first campaign I ever ran, I did the tried and true Matt Colville approved method of throwing all my players into a tavern and slowly letting them walk through the door.
Right.
Which is
classic.
Which is okay.
Classic.
Which
option.
Is okay. And and I'm like, hey, say your name, say what you look like, and say what would you do when you sit down at this table?
What's your business? And, yeah.
And for a bunch of people who have never played D&D before, it's very awkward to be like, hi, I look like a dragon, but two legs.
This is literally how it goes. Yeah.
I wear armor and I say, hi, my name is Nadar. And it's just like, okay, well, we could try to flesh that out a bit. Do you have any similar experiences to like awkward first introductions or your first experience trying to introduce a character, the woes of the moment?
Oh, totally. Literally all of them go like this. I remember there has been so many times where I've prepped a character properly where I'm like, okay, she talks like this, or they clank when they walk, or they have a crazy accent that I've tried for weeks. And then the moment goes and I'm like, hi, I just talk like me. Here I am. This is my art. You know,
this is my art.
It sucks. That's and then exactly you're like, right. Shit, I ruined it for myself. Somehow there's such a pressure to like deliver the, I guess, the right character, or like the character that's going to be it, you know, that you already figured out that you're going to play for weeks and weeks. And of course, that's never how it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
In the second week, you're like, oh, wait, now I get it. Now I get who I'm actually playing, instead of like all the preparation that I did and when I thought I knew my character.
It's so funny when you just rip the accent out on the first session and you're like, this is how I hope it's working.
I mean, kind of, yeah. But also, I feel like I have a good argument because I've tried to make British characters for so long, and it's so hard when like... Because I'm not native English speaking. I'm Dutch. So I can speak English quite well, but this is my sort of go-to English accent, I guess.
Mm.
But then if I have to like play D&D with American people with an American English accent, and then I have to be, as a non-native English speaker, do not my normal English, but like the British version of my normal English, which is also not native. That's like too many steps. And I've tried it so hard. When I have to like listen to people that do like American English back at me, my brain can't handle. So, you know, I tried. It's not working. So I'll stick to the huge.
I'll let you know, as someone who only speaks English, in the comfort of my own home with my own friends, I could pull out some wacky British-esque accent.
Yeah, I mean, quote-unquote British, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, but as someone who's played at international tables online, I will never, ever do the British accent with them. It is so embarrassing to try their accent in their face, and it's just like, no, never, 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 never.
I think I got over that fact, though, because I'm doing that all the time with you guys, because I'm not American. I just pretend like I'm talking like an American.
That's fair, that's fair.
But I can understand when there's British people at your table, you will offend them. So that's tricky.
It's a really embarrassing experience. Of quick, funny tangent. One of my first ever characters in D&D, my earliest influences of D&D was Critical Role. And I'm one of the newer age players. And I'm like, oh, they do cool accents. I gotta nail a cool accent for my first campaign, first character.
Of course,
so
yes.
My go-to, what I eventually defaulted in, which was... in retrospect, really funny and didn't pan out, and it's fine. I watched a whole lot of young Bjork.
Oh.
And her accent is like Icelandic, but she put a twist on it that is like not, it doesn't sound like anybody else. There's a very weird twinge to the way she talks.
Yeah.
And it's, when I listen to her, it's like almost like Faye, like the way she talks.
That makes sense.
It's very
though.
Peculiar. But I watched like the same three videos over and over and over again and like practiced the pronunciation. And I did that for like the first 5-10 sessions, and I eventually like gave up on it. I'm like, I can't keep this up. My vernacular isn't keeping up with the accent.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But it was very fun, and that was my first experience. And obviously not everybody's comfortable with that idea. So how do we smooth this out? Well, there's a couple of ways in the tabletop realm of working out a character enough that you're comfortable during the introduction phase. The first is session zeros. Session zeros are meetings with your game master, the person running the game, where you play on your own with just them and not the rest of your friends or the rest of your party, right? And that is where you work out all the kinks in the the armor, which is you work out the accent, you work out their disposition, their personality, and if something is bad or something doesn't work, you throw it out and try something else. And that whole session zero is the process of figuring out what works for you.
Also, it's great for understanding if you actually like the character that you made, because you can play it amazingly, but if you hate playing it, you're not going to keep it up for weeks and weeks, because usually D&D campaigns run for quite a while.
Ideally.
It's kind of like would you call it a prologue? Maybe not necessarily, more like a pilot version of the actual game, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, and there's plenty of stories of people who have played a character through session zero and they're like, this isn't working. Let's try something else, right? And that's perfectly fine. It's a safe space to like retcon that before the story actually starts to figure out exactly what you want this character to be and how they fit into the greater world. It's really important.
And I think it also changes per whatever group dynamic you're in. We had, I think, one or maybe two campaigns that eventually fizzled out just because the group dynamics were a bit chaotic, or we all kind of weren't sure about characters and stuff. And then you can still have your own individual cool prep. But if the group dynamics doesn't work, you still have to sort of bounce off each other after, you know, eventually. So if that doesn't work, which happens, which is totally fine, even that can change a character still, even though you got your stuff together. Yeah,
absolutely. When we step actually into the game and you meet all the other characters, it's very reasonable to realize that your character choice is possibly too similar to other people's character choices, right?
Yeah.
If you step into the story and you have three acrobats, it's like, okay, maybe we don't need three acrobats. Yeah. Or maybe we do. Maybe you lean into it.
We'll be a circus troupe
now. Okay, let me try to fill in. Let me lead into as if every D&D party isn't a circus.
I mean, yeah.
You know?
But, okay, good call. Yeah.
But, you know, maybe you could slowly transition into like a different niche or a different character. And that's perfectly fine. It's all about the process. Something that I also like, which is so, so fun, the tried and true method of Dimension 20, which is an online group of D&D players, sourced by College Humor. Big recommend. We're not sponsored, but I'd love
but they're
to be.
Great. Yeah.
Shout out to them. What they always do in their first episode is they give every character a moment to shine, which is what I learned from TV Tropes, which not to be the official name, but probably could be, is the debut cue, where you kind of line up the characters in a row and give them all a moment to
debut. Didn't know there was a word for that. That's great. I love that kind of sort of curtain call, but then in the beginning, yeah, I don't know what it's called. Well, I guess debut cue. Yeah, that's great.
So basically, every Dimension 20 campaign starts off with a small flashback. We're introduced to a character where they only talk to the game master, and they get to introduce their character kind of in a meta way to the rest of the cast by playing their character alone or
playing
a short solo scene with the game master. And you get to see their personality, a little bit of their backstory. You get introduced to the concepts of the world during this process. Like if they're involved with this field or this organization, you get to see a little bit of that. And you get to see their dynamic. So by the time everybody has introduced their character, we get not only a couple of different pieces of the world separately, but also the context of each character and where they're coming from once the team finally meets.
Right. Yeah. I love that. Specifically because it's in their, I guess, natural habitat. Is that how you call it?
Mm-hmm.
You can see sort of the family dynamics and all that stuff. But then still, you know what I always wondered before I kind of understood the Dimension 20 version is if you do it this way, it takes some time, right? It's one of the longer methods of introduction, I guess. It's not just a, hey, say your character and that's it. But it's like we're diving into your history a little bit. We're taking like a solid maybe 5-10 minutes to look, understand you as a singular character.
Right.
And if you do that for everyone, you know, if you have 5 or 6 players at the table or 4 maybe, even then it takes a while before you get to the actual meat of the, I guess, collaborative storytelling. I really noticed in using that method of play that you actually, because you only see them in their natural habitat, immediately it gets more interesting when you put them together and you instantly see the differences.
Exactly.
And the differences both in the world but also in the group dynamic again, because it's just, you know, everything's always new because there's just so much improv there. You don't really need to worry about that repetition or something.
Yeah, if every character is given 5-10 minutes of solo intro, that means there's half an hour of your friends just listening and absorbing the information and being like, oh, that's an interesting little tidbit about that character. I'm definitely going to poke and prod at that once we get into session.
Which is great. You know? Yeah, I love that.
Or, oh, they also love their sister. That's a future bonding point a couple episodes or a couple sessions down. You know, this is your friend's opportunity to learn about your character and realize how their character will interact with them when the time comes.
And also even for like more individual approaches, there's also more secrets to be had if you start with singular characters. Like if you start, for instance, what you were saying, like if someone's part of a guild or an organization of sorts that is, well, doesn't even have to be secretive, but like if it's a guild that's not well known or that no one else around the table knows, the other players instantly will realize this player that's part of the organization has more info on the world than they have on that particular aspect. But that also makes it very easy to be interested in other people, because if I don't really understand the conversation that they're having because I don't know the organization's ways of doing things or whatever even the organization is about, or if it's magic or if it's a guild or a government thing, I don't know, or a hobby club, you know, if you don't know, it's very easy to be intrigued by a character if not all parts are clear.
Right. Yeah. And it's just a way to collect talking points. If you throw everybody into a blank room and tell them them to talk, nobody's going to know what to talk about, right?
So like, what do is you there like to discuss? Do for a hobby?
Yeah, but if you get like these little tidbits of the character right before the session actually starts or before you guys start interacting, you know what they're interested in. You know exactly. what they could be easily engaged in.
Which is awesome, yeah.
So that's the context of introducing a character like in a tabletop setting. Now, how does that change for single author stories? You know, when there's only one person writing the story, what is the most important thing to consider during a character introduction? Like, because there's kind of an ensemble cast in these things, but they're all run by one person. One of the things I wanted to point out is that every character you introduce in a novel or a short story is intentional. There's a point to introduce them, right?
Mm.
In the context of the protagonist and the context of the greater story, whether to move a plot point, every character is, I won't say essential because some characters are just truly meant to be side characters, but there is a motive behind them and they're all united in that motive, so to speak, because they're all single author driven.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Opposed to the context of a tabletop where everybody introduces their characters and using that pool of characters, that's what you build the story on.
Yeah. Right.
It's characters first, story second, rather than...
It's a patchwork. Yeah. In a good way.
It's like a weaving...
It's a combination of things instead of like a sort of...
It's like putting a quilt together.
One way street approach. Yeah.
Yeah. In single author stories, the story comes first and then you write the characters to facilitate that story. Mm. Whereas in tabletop, you write the characters first and then you write the story to complement those
characters.
Yeah,
right. Right.
That kind of flip-flop dichotomy. It's always been so interesting to me.
And I think in some cases it can even be, but then you're really more talking about the writing method than about the actual, you know, how the characters are introduced in the final piece of media, I guess. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I also like to do this myself as a writer of short stories and stuff. Sometimes it's also really fun to take on the approach of collaborative storytelling more by just writing multiple characters and seeing how they bounce off each other. Like, let's just have these two random cool characters that I thought of have a dialogue and see mm-hmm. where they end up or if they hate each other. You know, there are ways to do that individually. And sometimes story can come out of that. But that, of course, will still always be process for the final story. And then in the final story, of course, the story has been sort of crystallized, you know, fine tuned in that way already.
There was something the concept I wanted to introduce, which is kind of the philosophy held by the game master of Dimension 20, Brendan Lee Mulligan. It's that he, when preparing for a tabletop setting or a new campaign, he writes 30% of the setting. Broad strokes, themes, ideas, motifs, genre, all those things in broad strokes. And then he asks his players, what characters would you like to play in this setting? And then once he has those characters, he learns what characters they want to introduce into the setting, what they cling to, what's most important to them from what he's made. Then he builds the other 70% of the world.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Because ultimately, in a tabletop setting, the progression of the characters, the hero's journey, so to speak, is the most important mm-hmm. part. So to build the world, the baseline, and then the characters, and then a setting that facilitates those characters is the perfect way to make sure that what the characters or the players care about is touched on, is focused on, is vitalized, so to speak.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. If people are into, for instance, a specific genre of play, like... I love the number crunching, and then you're not going to reply to that in your world, or you're going to be like completely slice of life chill mode, then everyone's not going to have a good time because your play styles and world building are not going to match up to the people that you're actually playing with. It's always a balancing act, of course, as being the DM, but I think that's a very good rule of thumb to keep in mind. And of course, I mean, apparently Mulligan is the most experienced one, I guess, talking in this way. So that makes a lot of sense that he does it that way.
Yeah. That's pretty much everything I wanted to touch on. Healing the painful points of character creation and character introduction and finding a way to work with your players and with your game master on making yourself comfortable in a setting and ready to tell a story.
Right, so right.
You know?
Yeah.
I think this is prep for future stuff and future things we'll probably cover on this podcast of building a greater world collaboratively and making a story that you can all be very, very proud of. And that's pretty much my topic. That's basically everything.
It. Yeah. So great.
Quick side tangent before we jump into our prompt. As of this recording, Dimension 20, again, we're not sponsored by Dimension 20, but I have to keep bringing this up. Dimension 20 started a season called Never After, which is like a gothic horror fairy tale genre campaign. And I got to say, I was listening to that, remember how season 3 was very spooky themed? Just in general, like overarching, we covered a lot of like really weird. It was. I went through our old topics And there's about, in season three alone, which is 12 episodes. 12 episodes? Yeah, 12 episodes. About 10 of our topics were touched on in
really?
The first three episodes.
Oh, God. Okay.
Like, overarching and specific. Even, I can't spoil it, obviously. You have to watch it yourself, but... if you want some prep or you want to ease into the new season of Rafter, I would very much recommend season three of the Your Rivers Are Wrong podcast. Most definitely. It was startling to me how much we overlapped.
Eerily specific, perhaps. Spookily specific. Yeah.
Spookily? Is spookily
is
a word?
I did it. I invented it.
It is now. That's true. Award-winning writer.
Thank you very much.
Has invented a word and it
now
exists.
It is the truth.
Spoken into existence. Yeah.
I've watched, like, I think the first 10 minutes of the Never, what's it called? I forgot. Never After thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much, like, grim, depressing German fairy tale vibes. And I'm here for it because I love that shit. It's great. And I really want to continue because it's great.
It's so
maybe
so
in the next episode we'll be able to, like, spoil because I've seen a little bit more than 10 minutes.
Anyway, let's jump into our prompt. We end every episode, have and will, end every episode with a prompt that is entirely improvised. I toss the question over to my co-host, and they have to improvise an answer
on
the spot. And that's just kind of the fun in it. So, in sticking with the theme, are you ready for the prompt today?
I'm not sure. Am I ready, Dante?
We'll find out.
Am I ready enough?
We'll find out. Okay, we are, because the topic is character introductions, I need you to put together a character. Describe for me the first introduction of a disappointing hero.
Of a disappointing hero. Oh, man.
That's the prompt.
Okay.
That's it.
Describe the introduction of a disappointing hero, you said, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Let me see. I feel...
What do I feel?
Let me wreck some shit in my brain palace to figure out who this person is. You know, going into the fairy tale grim vibe a little bit, since we're talking about it anyway. I feel like this is the... Okay, I'll actually, like, properly introduce this storytelling-wise. There has been an extreme, let's say, drought in a unspecific neighboring fairy tale-like country, like so many exist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The king and queen have been absolutely defeated by the land they are supposed to govern. Riches are slowly, you know, getting less and less. The people are angry. The people are hungry. Things are not looking up. So they turn to their only fairy tale appropriate alternative, which is wedding their daughter to a very wealthy nearby country.
Not
the entire country, but like a prince or something from that country. This is like a very big deal, right? Like, they always been like independent, thriving on their own. They've been always very strict on their, you know, trade and their export stuff, their hunting, whatever. Their riches were always theirs. And now finally they're kind of forced to take this step into the outside world, into, you know, borrowing, into making more connections with other countries because they just have to. So, you know, despite what the daughter thinks, because fairy tales. They take their very precious little angel to the first neighboring country of a cool fantasy name with a lot of apostrophes in it. Probably starts with a K, has like a Y in there somewhere, or like three of them. They're hosting like a giant banquet. There we go. Middle ground. I know words. I'm a writer. I'm an award-winning writer. The neighboring country hosts
never forget it.
A very large banquet to welcome these guests from afar. They want to help out because they want to strengthen their relationship. They've always been a bit of the underdog in the rest of the world. So, you know, they're all here for this. And they have 10 sons.
This is
all like prologue sealed to the actual hero.
Oh, man.
And one by one, you know, they introduce their family. The king and queen of the neighboring country have a political, a diplomatic chat, I guess, to welcome. They gift and get back presents from the other country, which are all very outrageous and not really useful, but they'll be like in a glass box somewhere for, you know, the poorer people to look at. And then slowly, once the food begins, this is like a giant set table, right? With like 20 gold plates and everything.
I see the vision. Yeah, I see it.
One by one, each of the son comes in. And now we shift to the perspective of the daughter, which is completely, you know, annoyed by this whole process. She's like, can I just become like a teacher or whatever? I guess not. Okay, cool. That sucks. Thanks, parents. She, you know, has the... How do you say that? I guess royal problem of being wed out to someone. She doesn't know which sucks.
Yep.
And one by one, this is like the realization slowly hitting her that the people that are going to come through this door is going to be the one that she's going to have to live with forever, which absolutely sucks. Mm-hmm. And one by one, as the banquet slowly begins to start, the oldest son and then the second oldest son and then the third oldest son comes in. The first son is, I would say, like a sort of example of a proper king, you know, the rich golden hair, the very wide-shouldered, well-educated, well-spoken man. Mannerisms like, you know, like he's the king already because he knows he's literally going to be. So he's pretty arrogant,
wears very shiny
everything, but is like also pretty handsome. So she's like, okay, that's pretty good. That could be like, I don't know. It's not ideal, but you know, I'll work it out. Slowly she sees each of the sons come in. And with every son, she's like, okay, I thought it was going to be like the older guy, but then he's maybe too old. So I'm not sure which one I'm marrying now. And then one by one, the sons come in and they get like each a little less like handsome looking. And the other one is a little more like bleak skinned as if he's been sick for a while. And the other guy looks really uninterested and has like hair that covers his eyes because he's like, I don't want to be here. And the other guy is, you know, it just keeps getting worse and worse. And then we get to the ninth son. The ninth son comes in and she's like, oh my God, this is going to be awful. They're all kind of her age range. So she doesn't really know who's it going to be.
what is this range? 10 this sons like, in the age range?
Yeah, let me think. Let me rephrase this to make this logic. Okay. I think actually the oldest son should be like too old for her because otherwise the story makes no sense.
Sure.
And then she's like, okay, I thought it was going to be the oldest son, but he's like 20 years older. That's maybe a bit much for like fairy tale standards. So, you know, we're going to scale it down. And then the next one comes in, keeps going. And then actually, as the ninth son has arrived, the king and queen say, okay. And then now for the, I guess, marriage candidate and the one that we would love for your little princess to meet, our final son, Norbert. And Norbert comes in.
And he's sorry to all the Norbert listeners. Yeah. I'm so sorry. There's a guttural reaction to the name
We're
Norbert.
We're going to have like a dip of audience
My
members
bad.
Now.
All the Norberts, please stay.
We switch to the perspective of Norbert, where suddenly, you know, he's waiting in line outside of the door. Mm-hmm, he's seen the princess come in, but only a glance, right? A hint of like, I don't know, dark, beautiful, glistening dark brown hair and a very beautiful dress. And he's like, okay, that's pretty good, but I hope she doesn't hate me. And then he sees all his brothers, I guess, go into the door one by one, and they're all better mannered than he is. And he also comes in and he's like, is it my turn yet? Once he gets in, you know, he's kind of blinded by all the candlelight and stuff. And he's like, okay, hello. And he's really...
Okay, hello.
I guess it's me, Norbert. I guess I talk like this. Yeah.
Introduction.
I don't really know where I'm going. Obviously, this is an improvised prompt.
This is so good. No, I'm on the edge of my seat. I need to know.
You know, I think
to know how this plays out.
I think Norbert just is not the best candidate. And our little princess is like, ah, okay, cool. Your name is Norbert? Okay. You know, but maybe you are like really kind. And then Norbert is like not really acknowledging like any of the other people in the room and kind of only looking at what she looks like and kind of looking her up and down. And he's probably her age because that's why they introduced him as like the marriage candidate. But then he also looks pretty measly and like he's not really ready. And now the princess starts thinking like, okay, is this like a sort of, because we know you need this marriage, like we don't even have to give you like the best son. Is this like a sort of age appropriate thing where it's like, well, you only have one princess and it's like frowned upon to date the older guy. So I guess this is what we'll have to do. Or maybe, you know, the heir, the one that's going to be king soon, doesn't want to be involved with a country that's kind of bankrupt. You know, that kind of sucks. So she's like in her mindset. And then Norbert comes to sit next to her and he's like, okay, hello.
Okay, hello.
This is all
he
says, yeah. He's got like the worst lessons of the entire kingdom, you know. The oldest son got the best education and then slowly trickled down and got like all hand-me-downs. Kind of sucks, yeah.
He has like one teacher and the one teacher always walked in. Okay, hello, it's time for class.
Yeah, basically. This is like his one example in life, yeah. Because the king is never around, you know. He's too busy for that shit.
Oh my gosh.
Okay,
so I need to know, is he the disappointing hero?
I think it's gotta be Norbert. Yes.
Ugh, it's gotta be Norbert.
Who else could it be?
That's true. That's pretty disappointing.
I'm sorry for all the Norberts out there that start their sentence with, okay, hello. But, you know, maybe change your tactic.
Listen, for all the Norberts out there, let it be known, you didn't choose your name. It's not your fault. And that's it. That's it.
That's, yeah. Nice.
Listen, I think that is a fantastic way to introduce the character. So much context into his position in life and his upbringing. We know the origins of his, okay, hello, you know, that's really important.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he has redemptive qualities. I think they'll get there, perhaps.
I think this is going to be like a Princess and the Frog, where they realize that he's actually, like, pretty capable in, like, the boring stuff that you need for, like, you know, getting your kingdom out of this, like, bankruptcy.
Listen, every kingdom needs a number.
No one teaches you that. They only teach you, like, table manners and, like, how to do your hair, like, real nice because you're, like, royalty and stuff.
He definitely got, like, all the normal people lessons, like, home rec.
Yeah, I was going like, to... Yeah, okay, so maybe his teacher his taxes, was, like, you know, the sort of basic teacher that they were, like...
Hey, just go to a public school. You know,
you're going to be fine. You don't... Yeah, you're the last on the list. Like, all the others have to die before you have to do anything, so you're going to be good. Yeah, just go to public school. And then he actually got, like, learned proper life lessons on how to deal with money and stuff instead of the royal lessons that the other brothers got. Yeah, that sounds fair.
Yeah.
And then the princess is like, what do you mean economy? What is, don't you, like, you can't even, like, shake my hand appropriately. Like, what do you mean money? I don't understand this.
How are you going to handle a country if you can't even shake my hand properly?
Yeah.
You know?
How do
He's
you
He's like,
do
well,
it?
Let me introduce you to W-2 forms.
Yeah. Let me show you the ways of middle class people.
Introducing a new word to you. Budgeting. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's start.
He's going to be the king of budgeting, man. And everyone's going to swoon for him because of his budgeting powers in the future, but not today.
Not today.
Unfortunately.
Perhaps it's a story for another time. Perhaps not.
Perhaps thank not.
Thanks for listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
We have so many more episodes just like this, for better or for worse.
Hope you're still here by then.
If you ever feel the urge to world build or storytell, feel free to. It's very fun.
It's so fun.
Trying to get you on that page where you can feel comfortable tapping into the deep, deep recesses of your imagination and bringing forth a world that has yet to exist.
That's
until
right.
Today. But as you do, as you prep that world, as you build on your own imagination and perhaps tell stories collaboratively, always remember just one simple thing.
Which is?
Your rivers are wrong. Thanks for tuning in. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Rivers Are Wrong. If you have ideas for topics, prompts, or you just want to share your thoughts, please reach us at yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. That's yourriversarewrong@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to Maarten Schellekens, who created the intro and outro music for our podcast. And most importantly, thank you for listening. We hope to see you at the next one. Bye.